Illegally Deaf is a podcast about overcoming obstacles. I'm Danny Burnside, and just this year, I was diagnosed with severe hearing loss. Oh, did I mention I'm a professional Hollywood voice actor? Funny how that goes. I've made the decision to own my disability and interview remarkable guests who are thriving in light of being disabled. Welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. Hey, Sylvia, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. It's wonderful to hear you again. I used to hear your voice all the time.
Yes, and congratulations on the Star Trek gig. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you so much. I'm over the moon on cloud nine, and I want to come back to that because it actually relates to my hearing loss condition. We recorded that just in November, so I was, let's say, half deaf by the time I was recording that. So I'm going to introduce you, and we'll wrap back to that because it's kind of a wild story of recording that in studio. Like, oh, I can barely hear the director.
Wow. Okay, yeah, great.
So, folks, my guest today is really a worldwide known individual. She's an accessible writer, a travel writer, a filmmaker, and a producer, a bilingual voice actor, media personality. She's an Air Force veteran. Folks, she won Miss Wheelchair USA in 2016. She was also diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, in 2005. The remarkable Sylvia Lungmeyer. Thank you so much for being here, Sylvia.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Danny.
You have such an incredibly inspiring story. Really, the first time I ever met you or heard you, I was kind of blown away. Because your story is unbelievable, as the credits allude to that I just listed, but you're very real about the struggles, the trials and tribulations that you go through, and you're a very relatable individual. It's just a really cool package that got going on. That's why I thought you'd be a perfect guest for the show.
Thank you. I'm just always excited to talk about my journey and just how it might possibly help other people who are either newly diagnosed or afraid to travel or work or do anything with a wheelchair. And if there's anything that I can do by either talking on a podcast or in a conversation with somebody to help them or inspire them to do bigger things, I'm thrilled to do it.
We're so thrilled to have you. And folks, welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. I'm Danny Burnside. Sylvia, real quick, let's plug what I just read on your Facebook page. You just struck an awesome deal with airports all across the nation. Tell us about that.
I did. So there's a company called Reach TV, and they do entertainment programming and news programming for the airport networks in the major airports. So if you're sitting at your gate and you're waiting to board and you see the TV somewhere and it's got, you know, some celebrities or news or sports or whatever, that's the network. So one of the producers came across my Spin the Globe website, my travel blog, and reached out to me because they do monthly, just different monthly guests and everything. And they thought that accessible travel needed to be a topic that needed to be explored more. And they found me and wanted to interview me down in their Miami studio. So I'll be doing that in a few months. And I'm thrilled. They have, I think, 100 million views or an audience of 100 million every month.
Wow.
Around the country. So just to have that opportunity, if even a couple people in the gate, you know, are paying attention, that's a couple people more that know about accessible travel. So I'm very excited.
I might book a flight out of LAX just to catch you and then get a refund on the way out.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So guys, her website, I'll say it again at the end, but it's spintheglobe.net. Spintheglobe, all one word, .net. That's where you can follow Sylvia's travel. She's been to 57 countries, 48 countries as a wheelchair user. I'll say that again. She's been to 48 countries as a wheelchair user. Ridiculous, Sylvia.
Yeah, and there's more to come, more to come.
Okay, right on, right on. So let's rewind here. You served in the Air Force. So tell us, where did you grow up and how the heck did you end up in the Air Force?
Sure. So I grew up in South Florida. I'm the daughter of Cuban immigrants. My dad went to the Cuban Naval Academy and was in the Cuban Navy for a little while until the missile crisis in 62. That's a whole, I could write a book about that. So I was raised in a very kind of military type environment, I guess you could say, in South Florida. Based on my upbringing, the military just seemed to be a natural fit. And I applied for a Navy and an Air Force ROTC scholarship, and I got the Air Force one. But yeah, I went through Air Force ROTC at the University of Miami, graduated from FIU, and then I went on active duty as a second lieutenant, you know, right after graduation. And I served for 8.5 years. I was a special agent in the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. So we did criminal investigations. I did counterintelligence, counterterrorism, counterespionage. It was a very, very exciting 8.5 years until I was diagnosed with MS. and then I'm medically retired.
So you were diagnosed with MS while you were serving towards the end of your service?
Yes, 8.5 years in January 2005, and then I was medically retired 6 months later.
Looking back on your life prior to that diagnosis, can you say that you saw any signs of MS? First of all, can you explain to us what MS is, and did you experience any signs leading up to that actual diagnosis?
Sure. So MS is an autoimmune disease. Basically, my body thinks that my nervous system is the enemy. So it attacks my nervous system, very specifically the myelin sheath or the coating on my nerves. And that causes a wide variety of symptoms. Basically, it can cause symptoms anywhere in your body where you have nerves. I actually had my first symptom when I was in graduate school as part of my active duty service in 2003. I lost vision in my right eye, like maybe 80% of my vision. And fortunately, eventually it went away, but that is one of the most common presenting symptoms. But I had nothing else wrong with me. My MRIs were all clean, and I started having symptoms every so often, and it took about 2.5 years for me to get a diagnosis. So yeah, I did have plenty of symptoms and I was on active duty, but I would notice numbness and tingling when I would get hot, like when I would work out or go running or things like that. So yeah, it takes a while to diagnose, and eventually I checked off all the boxes, and that's why I got the diagnosis while I was on active duty.
So how long after the MS diagnosis did you find yourself requiring a wheelchair for transportation?
It took a while. It took a while. Like I was medically retired in 05. Then I started using a cane in, I'm going to say maybe 08. And then I was using a walker after that. I started using a walker in 2011. I remember because my ex-husband had deployed to Afghanistan. And that's around the time that, you know, I started to decline a bit just for, you know, from the stress of having your husband gone and having, you know, two small children. Then after that, I started using a scooter for longer distances. And then I started using a wheelchair full time in 2014. So it was about 9 years after I was diagnosed that I started using the chair.
So you were a full-time wheelchair user in 2014. And then 2 years later, you won Miss Wheelchair USA. That's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah. It was, you know, I was looking for, I had started a nonprofit in late 2015. I was looking for ways to publicize that nonprofit. And then that's how I was doing Google searches and I came across two different pageants. There's Ms. Wheelchair America, Ms. Wheelchair USA. Ms. Wheelchair America, I had missed the cutoff for applying. So I applied for Ms. Wheelchair USA. And there were, I believe, 12 of us. I can't remember the exact number, maybe 10 or 12 of us that competed that year in Ohio. And it was a life-changing experience. I did not know any other wheelchair users. I mean, I was surrounded by military people. I went from being active duty to being a military wife, an Air Force wife. So I didn't know anybody. And now all of a sudden I'm meeting all these incredible women who are fierce and strong and independent and all wheelchair users with different conditions and different life stories. And it was just absolutely amazing. And yeah, I happened to win, but I got to tell you, just it was wonderful to have the crown and have that title. But just the experience of meeting all those women and then going back the following year to crown the next Ms. Wheelchair USA and meet another group of amazing women. I mean, it was just a life-changing experience.
So you mentioned your family before. I know you said your ex-husband, but also I know you have a couple sons. I believe you have two sons. How was that adjustment for your family? You know, they grew up seeing you such a strong individual, as you still are, but let's say physically strong, obviously serving in the Air Force. How was the adjustment for your sons in particular, watching their mom go through this MS diagnosis and progression?
My sons are amazing. They are just very active and amazing teenagers. My older son's almost 16. My younger son is 13 and a half. They were pretty little. I mean, my younger son had them both after I was diagnosed. My younger son doesn't remember me walking at all. My older son barely remembers me walking. He remembers me using a walker. And I remember maybe a few years ago. I'm able to stand up if I grab onto something. I'm able to pull myself up, plant my feet and pivot. I can't lift my legs or move them at all. So I did that once, I think, in the kitchen a few years ago. And it was the first time my younger son had seen me stand up, because normally it's like in the bathroom or somewhere private where I'm pulling myself up. Mm-hmm. And he was like blown away. He's like, oh my God. I'm like, dude, I'm like, yeah, this me, I'm 5'6", you know,
right.
I can stand up or whatever. But he was kind of blown away by it. But really, for the most part, they really only know their mom in a chair. And when they were smaller, we would go like to a theme park or somewhere where there was a lot of walking involved. They would take turns riding on my lap if they would get tired. I'm like, oh, come on. You know, you guys are young. You can walk, like, go do it, you know. But now they're huge. Obviously, they can't do that. But they really know nothing else. They pay it no mind. I volunteered at their school when they were little. So I wanted to make sure that their friends saw me in a chair to kind of demystify it so they would understand that it's normal. And because I don't want them to get teased, you know what I mean? Like, they can make fun of me or whatever if they want, because, you know, kids can be mean and kids don't understand, but I wanted it to be a normal experience for them and all their friends. And it's so funny, as they live with their dad during the school year, and they live about an hour and a half away. So I'm able to go to their sporting events, their school events and stuff like that. And a lot of my children's friends follow me on TikTok because I'm verified and have, like, I don't know, almost 100,000 followers. So for awesome. Them, that's like a celebrity status.
What's right? the handle? What's so the handle?
It's Spin the Globe. So cool. It's the at sign and then Spin the Globe on TikTok. And a lot of my friends from high school, their kids follow me on TikTok. So whenever I see them at, like, volleyball games or birthday parties or whatever, they all come up to me and they're like, oh my gosh, Ms. Longmire. They think I'm a celebrity. It's the cutest thing ever. It really is.
I admire so much about you, how you just attack this head on. You don't shy away. You just attack it. You go through it. It's so admirable, Sylvia.
I appreciate that. It's very therapeutic for me. So it's not always a selfless endeavor, but for me, it's very therapeutic because I'm on Facebook a lot. It's part of my job. I'm a social person. I like interacting and I like sharing both my successes, but I like to try to be an authentic person. And a lot of people say, well, it's fake book, right? You only see the highlights and the good things of people, but I feel that it's important to put the ugly stuff out there as well. I recent very horrific experience as a hospital patient. I had the flu for the first time in my life, and that experience in the hospital was just awful. It was humiliating. It was very sobering for somebody like me who I live alone, I travel alone, I work very hard, and to be bedridden for a week and to have somebody to be completely dependent on total strangers to take care of every aspect of me and not being able to get out of bed for a week was very sobering. And I shared that experience. I've shared my experience with getting therapy for relationship issues and other issues and stuff because I'd want to demystify it. And once I start sharing very raw aspects of my life, either with MS or other hardships, my inbox gets flooded with other people who are having the same issues, but they're either ashamed or embarrassed or just don't want to talk about that in public, but all of a sudden they can relate. And it's amazing once you start putting that stuff out there, how many other people are dealing with the same issues. So I look at it as if I can help somebody, like, I'm not embarrassed by it. Like, I don't care. I'm 49 years old. I'm in a wheelchair. Like, what do I get? Yeah, I'm at that point in my life where I don't care what other people think. I'm very confident in who I am. So if I can help somebody by sharing the uglier or the more difficult parts of life, then of course I'm going to put it out there. So, you know, part of it is selfless. Part of it is selfish because it helps me get through the hard times to have that support from other people by putting my stuff out there.
I've always felt that when we set the tone as exposed and vulnerable, we let others know, and confident as well, but particularly exposed and vulnerable, we let others know that they can respond in a similar fashion.
Sure. I think in a post-COVID world, particularly mental health is becoming more significant. I think it's becoming at least a bit more of a priority in just the way that things are going in the world with, you know, mass shootings and everything. And I think everybody could benefit from therapy, but therapy is expensive. And a lot of times counseling is not covered by insurance. So I think everybody can benefit from it. So if you can't get formal therapy out there, if just hearing and talking to friends or family members or even total strangers. I mean, you know, look at all of us, you know, how we met, you know, through social media and through Clubhouse, through the pandemic and everything like that. And we've shared so many things with people that we've never met in person. And that, you know, that little stretch of anonymity over the internet can really allow people the freedom to open up and get through some things. So I think I really think it's a great thing.
You know, I've been struggling with insurance because in a lot of cases, hearing loss is not covered in insurance policies, which is hilarious because your ears are attached to your skull. I've been going back and forth. You know, some plans do cover, some plans don't. It's always a percentage. It's rarely the whole thing. It's been a very frustrating journey so far because I'm actually picking up my hearing aids this Sunday. So just in a couple of days, I'm picking them up. Yeah, I'm thrilled about it. When I tried them on and walked around, it was like a whole world opening up. Like, wow, I've missed all these sounds for so many years. It was really, really eye-opening. So I'm thrilled that it's happening, but it's been very frustrating.
So I get an incredible amount of care from the VA. You hear a lot of horror stories about veterans who have been let down and falling through the cracks with the VA. But The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I gained representation through the Paralyzed Veterans of America shortly after I was medically retired and entered the Veterans Administration system. So they pay for the majority of my accessible van. They've paid for renovations that I've had to make to my home to have a roll-in shower put in. And also through TRICARE, the military medical system, as a retiree, I'm able to get excellent neurological care, my MRIs, my medication, because my medication is very expensive. However, that being said, I have so many friends who are civilians who are disabled with a variety of things, whether it's MS, spinal cord injury, spinal muscular atrophy, muscular dystrophy, you name it. And I have friends who have it. They have struggled with not only medical insurance, but also Social Security disability insurance. That process is a nightmare. Like, if you don't have an attorney or somebody helping you get through it, it is just an absolute nightmare. And politics is making it even more challenging to get approved for disability, for the government funded disability. So I don't envy people who have to go through it. My heart absolutely breaks that you can't get the basics of care, and also that your ability to work and make a living outside of disability is restricted because of that. Like, you know, just because you can work a little bit, you know, it doesn't make your disability go away. A lot of times this system keeps people with disabilities at poverty level and reliant on disability, because if they start working just a little bit, even part-time, then they're making too much money to qualify for that help they need. And it's very frustrating, and a lot of people who are not disabled don't understand how difficult it is for us just to work and be independent, and it's just a system that's broken.
You mentioned that you gave birth to your two sons already diagnosed with MS. Were there any complications in pregnancy?
During pregnancy, oddly enough, when you're pregnant, you produce a chemical called estriol. For whatever reason, it's not completely understood. All your MS symptoms completely go away when you're pregnant.
Funny. I had no idea. Yeah, funny.
Yeah, nobody really knows exactly how it works. And they're working different research on therapies and stuff, is taking a look at how they can turn that into maybe an MS treatment. The only problem is that once you give birth, then everything that you've been like saving up for, I guess, or, you know, all the stuff that you've been not dealing with during pregnancy comes back to hit you.
Wow.
And the majority of women, right after they give birth, they get hit with a relapse. And I did both times. For me, it wasn't too bad. I mean, I had them only a couple of years after I had my older son in 2008, my younger son in 2010. So it was only a few years after my diagnosis. So it just, walking was a little difficult. I was more tired, but yeah, I was still walking after my second son was born. It was a relapse, so I got over it after a few months. During the pregnancy, everything's great. Afterward, it can get a little difficult, but yeah, I was able to take them to the mall and, you know, walk around for a little bit, lose the weight and everything. And fortunately, my MS didn't start getting worse, which started affecting my ability to walk until my younger son was out of diapers and able to crawl into the car seat by himself. Mm. So I was very, very fortunate that I was able to have them and be physically able to take care of them. And then after I started getting worse, we had the financial means to hire a nanny to, I was working at home, so she was able to come with us and to the park and out to eat, help take care of them to make sure that they were safe while we were out and just doing typical, you know, mom and child things.
So when you're out, how do you find accessibility to be for a wheelchair user?
Oh gosh, it depends. It totally depends. There's so many different variables, and there are so many things that are not covered by the ADA. I'm out and about all the time. As you know, you see on Facebook, I'm out at bars. I'm very active in the live music scene. I'm active in the arts community. I go to restaurants and in the movies and everything like that. So to give you an example, like at a restaurant, the entrance, there's still a lot of places that don't have accessible bathrooms or have a ton of violations and you have stuff in the way, like whether it's, I can't reach the soap dispenser or the paper towel dispenser because the ADA doesn't cover their placement. So a lot of times they're too high or out of reach, or the huge toilet paper dispensers are like, they put them in the way where I can't comfortably get the grab bar and stand and pivot to transfer. I remember going to a Panera. They have a great bathroom, the entrance, you know, everything. There's lots of space to get around, but I can't reach the straws, or I can't reach the lids or the cups, you know, or it's too difficult for me to get my soda. Again, things that are not covered by the ADA. So it's fine. I have to go to the manager or somebody, one of the employees will come over and get the stuff for me. I'm like, just move it to the front. Same thing with a buffet at a hotel. All the stuff, like trying to get the eggs, it's got a lid on it. So I always have to ask somebody to help me. So people are helpful and they're available to help me. But as a very independent wheelchair user, I want to do those things by myself. That's what people don't understand. And they assume that a wheelchair user will always have a companion with them, whether it's a spouse or a friend, to do those things for them. But we don't want to. I'm like, I'm not six. I want to be able to do it by myself. And all you have to do is just put the stuff closer to the edge of the counter. But unless you're disabled, you don't think like a disabled person. So, you know, I kind of get it.
What is the ADA?
The ADA is the Americans with Disabilities Act. It was signed in 1990, and it sets out a list of not only what our civil rights are as people with disabilities, but also lists the requirements, the logistical and technical requirements for things like ramps, parking spaces, and those are also under, you know, different state regulations as well, where grab bars need to be, in bathrooms and the placements and the heights of toilets and how much space needs to be between a hotel bed and the wall and things like that.
What kind of music do you like? You said you go to a lot of concerts, but what kind of music inspires you?
Oh my God. I've been into music since I was little, and I started playing the piano when I was seven.
Awesome.
So I was a classically trained pianist. So everything from Mozart and Beethoven to Alice in Chains to Tori Amos to U2 and Coldplay, Carrie Underwood, I like anything and everything. I'm a Swiftie. I'm not going to lie. I became
no shame in that.
I've always known her music, but I really got into her about maybe a year ago, like after Anti-Hero came out. That song just was an earworm and I couldn't stop listening to it. And then I'm a huge football fan. So of course, when she and Travis Kelce got together, I'm obsessed. I'm completely obsessed with that. So that's my current thing. When I sing, I usually sing either classic rock, 90s alternative, light metal stuff. I'm a tenor one, so I sing mostly guy songs.
Interesting, interesting.
But I'm all, when it comes to music, I'm not picky. I'm really all over the map.
I sang a lot of vocal jazz in my teenage years, and now I'm more of like a baritone tenor too, obviously. But at that time, I could pull off even an alto too. So we had a 5-member vocal jazz group, 3 guys and 2 girls. I was actually singing the alto two part in that group for a couple songs.
That's impressive. Yeah, it was cool. That's impressive.
I don't know if you're familiar with a vocal group called The Real Group. It's a Swedish vocal jazz group. If you're not, you would love them. And I sing a couple of the alto lines in their charts. What's your football team?
Excellent. To your audience, don't hate. All right. Don't hate. I'm a Cowboys fan.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. I grew up in California, in San Diego, so I was a Chargers fan. Then we moved to the central coast of California for my teenage years. There's no team there, and there was no team in L.A. at the time either. Neither the Rams or the Raiders were in L.A. at that time. So you were kind of either a Niners fan or I don't know what else you'd be, I guess, like a Packers fan or a Cowboys fan because they were doing well at the time. This was like the mid-90s, early 90s. And you already know it was Cowboys, Niners, and the NFC Championship every single year. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
The glory days.
It was awesome. I mean, it really was fantastic matchups every year.
Well, we just keep hearing about it. It's like, oh, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And we always get knocked out after the first round of the playoffs. We always get knocked out. And we will have our glory again. We will have our glory again.
So when you go to concerts, is it challenging? Is there a wheelchair section that you find is a good view and good sound? Or is that a disadvantage when you go out to concerts?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been to, so I went to U2 at the Sphere, and that was almost a religious experience. I've been a U2 fan since I was a teenager, so I was able to get really good seating. I mean, in the Sphere, like, there's really not a bad, there are only a few bad seats in the house, and that's under the overhang, and that's a whole other controversy, but I had really good seats. The sound was incredible. The view was amazing. Nobody was standing up in front of me, so that was phenomenal. And here in Orlando, the big arena is the Kia Center. It used to be the Amway Center. And I haven't been to a concert there, but I go to Orlando Magic games and the minor league hockey games, Solar Bears games, all the time. And I always sit more or less in the same sections. And it's great. The view is amazing. It's comfortable. I go with my kids all the time. I go with friends. I'm able to get accessible seats through Ticketmaster pretty easily. I go to baseball games all over the country. All over the country. I love live baseball. And some of the stadiums are better than others, just depending on the age. Probably my favorite baseball stadium that I've been to is the Rogers Center in Toronto. And the seats are great, but I've also been to Fenway Park a few times. And it's old. They're under the overhang, so the view isn't phenomenal just because it's, you've got like a little slice of the view, but I can see, and it's fun. And I've got my little accessible space and everything. So a lot of times it depends on the age of the facility, but I haven't had any trouble. And I've been to a couple of Cowboys games and stuff too. And that was great in Jacksonville. Yeah, I had a great seat on the club level in Jacksonville for the Jaguars Cowboys game. So it's been pretty good.
So you've been to 48 countries as a wheelchair user. Can you share some of the highlights and lowlights of those travels?
Yeah, it's crazy because we're the only country in the world that really has that kind of federal accessibility law. There are a couple of countries that come close, but really we've got the best as far as legislation goes. Yet I have found the accessibility to be better in other countries in some cases than the United States. It's really a mixed bag, and it's so destination specific. Barcelona is amazing for accessibility. London is really good. Europe is very intimidating for wheelchair users because all we think of is old and cobblestones. And when the older a place is, usually the harder, the more difficult the accessibility is. There are some countries and cities that have made amazing strides as far as that goes. My favorite city in the world is Vienna in Austria. I love it. And the accessibility is really good. And you're thinking, well, Vienna's been around for a really long time. However, the population in Vienna is very old. So they cater to that older population to make things easier for them. So yeah, they have cobblestones, but they've replaced a lot of the cobblestones with pavers. So it still retains that historic look, but it makes it easier. And not just for wheelchair users, for people who are elderly, for moms who have babies in strollers, because the last thing you want is when you finally get your baby down for a nap and to start going, taking that stroller over cobblestones and stuff. Germany is really good. Berlin is amazing. Frankfurt is amazing. Tons of cities in Europe that are great. Plenty of cities in the United States that are good. Washington, D.C. and Las Vegas are my favorite for accessibility here. The subway systems, trains, I love taking trains in Europe. Museums and lots of amazing places, national parks that are wheelchair friendly and easy to visit. But then you have the nightmare scenarios in the hotels where 95% of the hotel rooms that I stay in have an ADA violation. I'm only able to take a shower in maybe 50% of them because the showers are not compliant. And you've got the place where I have to sit in the shower on one end and the shower controls at the opposite end and I can't reach them, things like that. In a lot of cities, there's no available accessible transportation. So no accessible taxis or no bus system. I could never go to LA by myself. Mm-hmm. I've stayed in LA when I was in active duty. I lived there for 3 months. I've been there for work several times. If I go, I have to stay in a hotel very close to the airport so I can get an accessible shuttle to and from. And there are some taxis, but you know, LA is like so spread out. Yep. If I try to take a bus from one side of town to the other, it'll take me like maybe 6 hours. It's just not practical unless you're driving, and I can't drive in a rented van by myself because they're not designed for that. So transportation options can be a problem. And there are a lot of cities and destinations around the world that it's just impossible for me to go because it's just not doable. South America and Africa, because they have, you know, developing nations, the accessibility is not great. That being said, I've been to both and there are accessible tour providers in both, but it's challenging. I spent several days in Cape Town, South Africa, and that was just an amazing experience. I spent a day in Tangier in Morocco, but I needed a lot of help for that. And South America has, and Central America have a lot of challenges. So it's very destination specific.
Are you working when you travel, or is a little bit of work and pleasure?
Oh, Danny, every day I'm working. Every day I'm working. I'm a brand ambassador for the company that makes the wheelchair that I travel with. Or really, it's the wheelchair that I every time I leave the house, I use my Will power chair.
Plug it. Do you want to plug the company?
Yeah, sure. It's called Will, WHILL. And the chair that I use is called the C2. We also make a folding model called the Model F. Yeah, I've been working for that company for a few years now, and I absolutely love it. I love the chair that I use, and I'm so thrilled to be able to represent them. So my job, basically, I get paid to take photos and videos of myself living my best life in my chair and post them on the internet. It's the best job in the whole world.
I'm mad at that. So, if you need an intern, let me know.
Yeah, it's an amazing job. Downside is that every time I leave the house, I have fun. Don't get me wrong. I have an amazing life, and I have fun doing pretty much anything. Every time I go somewhere, my brain is constantly looking for opportunities to take photos and videos. Constantly, because A, it's my job, but B, you know, also I want people who have disabilities or are wheelchair users to see that they're able to do regular stuff. Like I just posted my latest Instagram reel. It's just me at a dance club that we have here in Sanford, where I live in Florida. They play like 80s music and progressive stuff. The caption was like, let's normalize wheelchair users being in dance clubs. Like how many times do you go to a bar or a club or whatever and see a wheelchair user? Like rarely, because a lot of times accessibility isn't great. You've got big crowds and everything, but it's doable. It's doable. And I'm always at a bar, a lot of times dive bars and stuff, because I'm listening to live music or I'm singing at a jam night and stuff. So I want people to see me doing that. When I travel, a lot of times it's paid travel for press trips. So it's my job to do the photos and videos. But even if I'm just on vacation or just a spontaneous trip somewhere, it's hard for me to be in the moment and just put the phone away, enjoy the sunset or enjoy the view or enjoy whatever beautiful place I'm at, without constantly thinking, oh, this would make an amazing video. This would make an amazing photo. Travel with my kids all the time, especially during the summers. We go on road trips and stuff. And many times I get sponsored for parts of those road trips. So taking photos and videos, and they help me with that, is part of the job. So I have to tell them a lot, like, hey, these photos, it's what's helping us be here. Many times they get frustrated with it, and understandably so. They just want to go and do stuff and not have to worry about taking pictures and videos of mom. They know it's part of my job. They appreciate the privilege that comes with it, because we get special treatment sometimes. But sometimes they're just like, mom, you know, I don't stop taking so many photos. Let's just go do this. So they keep me humble. I have to remind myself to just relax and be in the moment and not have to worry so much about work.
You mentioned Vienna being one of your favorite cities. As a classical music lover, you're right at home in Vienna.
Oh my God.
You know, it's just, I've been to Salzburg and a couple other cities, Kitzbühel, Austria. It's like a vacation city. Yeah. Never been to Vienna. It's on my bucket list, but obviously you know that Salzburg is the birthplace of Mozart. Did you have any chance to visit any cathedrals and listen to any music when you were in Vienna?
Yes. In Vienna, if you go to the Lippensangerstallion show, they play Strauss. That was incredible. And then you've got the St. Stephen's Cathedral. I believe it's St. Stephen's Cathedral. I grew up as Catholic. I haven't been a practicing Catholic for quite some time. But that being said, I still appreciate the tradition and all of the, you know, just the procession and everything in the music. So many times if I'm traveling and I'm able to get into a Catholic mass, I don't, you know, participate anymore, but the music, and especially if they have a choir and when they're doing mass in a foreign language, I love that. So I was able to attend a mass when I was in Vienna at one of the smaller cathedrals that was there and listen to the mass in German. So even if I don't understand the language, you know, if you're a Catholic long enough, you know what's happening.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, every mass is pretty much the same. So that was really cool. And in Germany, they had a choir that was singing years and years ago. I was in the Piazza Navona in Rome, and they had a choir that was singing while I was having a five-course meal that lasted like 3 hours.
Wow.
And then my most amazing musical experience, I was able to listen to a chamber, I think it's four or five pieces, and it was in Prague, and they were doing Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
Wow.
And Vivaldi's Winter is my favorite piece of classical music. So to be able to listen to that, like I have chills just thinking about it, in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and listen to Vivaldi, it was just one of those things that was incredible. I listened to Mahler in Munich. Anytime I get a chance to listen to music in a foreign country, I'm down for it. And I've had just really some incredible experience. And all of this is a wheelchair user. All of this is a wheelchair user, and all of it by myself. When people come up to me, Danny, and they see me in a wheelchair and total strangers that will rudely cross the room and just not even introduce themselves and say, what happened to you? I never tell them I have MS, because the first thing they say is, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, sorry, especially if it's over the internet, right? You know, like, I'm sorry you're not here. I'm on this cruise and told by myself. And I'm like, look at this. And I'm like, I'm sorry you're not here. Yeah. So it's like when people feel sorry for me because I'm in a chair, I'm like, come on, like, give me a break. Look at what I'm doing. You know, get a hold of yourself, son. My musical journey, but just the experiences I've had in travel have just been incredible.
What are some of your favorite national parks? That's right up my alley. I love visiting national parks.
It's a national monument. One of my favorite places on earth is Monument Valley. That had been on my bucket list. I don't know if you remember the second Mission Impossible movie. the opening where Tom Cruise is doing, is climbing one of the buttes in Monument Valley, and he's free climbing and he's like hanging from a cliff, and then he gets helicoptered out of there or something. And ever since I saw that, I was like, I have to go there. Now, Monument Valley has been featured in a million Westerns with John Wayne and all sorts of other people. It's very, very iconic. The only way you can see it is through one of the local Navajo guides. You can't just drive around there and, you know, just kind of see all this stuff by yourself. So Monument Valley is amazing. I've been to Moab a couple of times, to Arches, Canyonlands, and that's amazing. I've been to Yosemite a couple of times. I love Glacier. I absolutely love Glacier National Park. I was able to take my kids there. But yeah, Moab is just, I've been at the Grand Canyon and it's fine. Monument Valley is just, that was like almost a religious experience.
So I want to circle back to the great compliment you gave me at the beginning, this Star Trek thing, and it does relate to accessibility. I want to touch on that. So, folks, I was really blessed and fortunate that I booked the role of Captain Kirk in a Star Trek video game, voicing the role of Captain Kirk. Yay. You know, voice actor. Yeah, super cool. I'm just, when I got the call from my agent, I was just floored. I was like, oh, did you mean an NPC? He's like, no, Captain Kirk. I was like, you sure you don't mean an NPC? You sure you don't mean just a supplementary character? So yeah, I'm voicing Captain Kirk. It's the new generation, the new films. So Chris Pine is the on-camera actor that you would see in those movies, and I'm the voice of Captain Kirk now. So really cool. But as I told you, Sylvia, we just recorded that in November. The game just released, so that's why I just made the post about it. It is currently February 28th for our listeners, and we just recorded that in November, and that was an in-studio recording. The world of voiceover has changed a lot since the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, really all the gigs were in studio. Post-pandemic, I would say only about 20% of gigs are in studio. The vast majority of our gigs are done from our home studios. This particular one was in studio. There was an engineer on site across the glass. I could hear him very well through my headphones in the booth. And then immediately when the director joined us, I'm sure he was connected through Source Connector ISDN, but he also joined via a Zoom feed. Sylvia, I could barely hear a sound coming through the earphones, and that was the director. And I'm sitting there in the booth, on the clock. You know, in film and TV and voiceover, guys, there's no rehearsal period. You just show up and do the gig. They're not going to, like, spend time making sure. I mean, you'll do a level check. That's about it. Sylvia, I could barely hear the director. And this was a very frustrating moment. Like, what am I going to do here? You know, I'm supposed to be Captain Kirk, a confident captain here. And I can barely even hear. I had the headphone volume all the way cranked up, literally all the way to the right. You can't turn it anymore without busting that knob off. Yeah. I had to really, really focus and concentrate on every word the director was saying just to get it through. Now, luckily, it was enough that I could hear him. That was a really unique situation that I didn't know that I was walking into. I'm thrilled to say everything worked out, but every time the director said something, I had to concentrate and labor to hear what he was saying. So I wonder for you, have you encountered any difficulties given your disability doing gigs, doing performance gigs?
The only problem that I have is that I can't stand up. People with disabilities are grossly underrepresented in entertainment and in so many films and so many TV shows and stuff. You have able-bodied actors that are playing disabled roles. And it's getting a little bit better, but still very grossly underrepresented.
Now, if I'm being very transparent, and that's really what this show is all about, I have no idea how I'm going to make the adjustment wearing hearing aids doing voiceover. I have no idea, Sylvia. It's going to be a lot of trial and error, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Yes, that's the thing, is that, and it's a military phrase, right? Adapt and overcome. The adaptations and the things that I've had to do just physically to make things work, like right now, right? So I can't move my legs. And so in order to adjust them on my foot plate when I'm sleeping, I have two yoga straps wrapped around my feet right now. And I have these long straps that I'm always trying to figure out where to put them just to get them out of my way. But it's yoga straps were not designed for this. That's what I use them for. And that's how I'm able to move my feet around and get them in the position that I need to. That's just one of many things. So I have a ton of tools, some of which are designed for disability and some of which are not. Even just using my teeth to open up containers and open up potato chip bags because I can't really use my right hand very well. So it's like whatever you have to do, whatever tool you have to use for headphones, if you have to use extra padding and put adhesive additional padding on your headphones to pull them away from your ears to accommodate the hearing aids or whatever, I promise you, you will be more creative than you ever thought possible, and you will figure it out because that's what we all do.
What would you say to someone, Sylvia, who may be listening to this podcast who has a disability? You mentioned fear earlier. Who is fearful of admitting it to themselves or their loved ones? What advice would you give to that individual?
Talk to other people. Talk to other people who have whatever it is that you have or have gone through the journey already before you, and talk to them and ask them for advice. We've all been there. I love talking to people who are newly diagnosed, especially veterans, because it's so scary and the fear of the unknown is so real. And there are so many people who just go through a deep depression. Some people who become suicidal because they just think that they can't get through it. And they just don't know what awaits them. And they think that it's the end of the world and that they have no future. And it's not like that. I mean, maybe it was like that 50 years ago, you know, but it's not like that anymore. There are support groups out there. Just talk to somebody. The internet has a lot of great stuff. Get on Reddit. I've become just a huge fan of Reddit. I never used it until maybe a couple years ago. And there is a subreddit for anything and everything. There's Facebook groups where people are talking about their own experiences and are very brutal and very blunt about not only the challenges, but just answering questions and giving people hope and giving people confidence to persevere. That's the number one thing, is to talk to somebody else who's been through it and ask questions, because knowledge is power. I know that's very cliche, but it's true. And I find that with accessible travel, so many people that are afraid of leaving the house and getting on a plane, particularly, I mean, there's plenty to be afraid of with good reason. The more I know about where I'm going or what I'm trying to do, it gives me the confidence to have that information. So whether you get that from the internet or you get that from somebody else who's been through it, get that information. And that really helps alleviate a lot of those fears.
Sylvia, you are truly a remarkable individual. And on behalf of all my listeners and me as a friend, thank you so much for your time today coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me, Danny. I so appreciate it.
Folks, her website is spintheglobe.net. TikTok handle is spintheglobe. Instagram handle is Sylvia_Longmire, SYLVIA_Longmire, LONGMIRE. Well, Sylvia, thank you so much again. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Danny.